You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello, welcome ladies and gents to episode 56, One Orc to Rule Them All from
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about legacy.
Most of the time.
So, Peter, I can only talk to you because we have lost Phil today.
Yeah. He got tempted by the ring.
No. He's not here because he's kind of occupied with work-related duties. Let's put it that way. But what I want to share with you is actually it is almost only like 3 weeks until we have our Austrian Legacy Masters coming up.
It's really close now.
Exactly, yeah. We need to make sure that all the people who want to come really come. The spots are getting closer and tighter, so make sure to register. It's very important. A few spots are definitely left, and make sure to visit us in Austria and fight for one of those precious European Legacy Masters slots that you can grab here. It's actually on the 28th. To 30th of July, so in 3 weeks. If you have not planned anything, make sure to check it out. We can link it definitely in the show notes.
For sure, for sure. And yeah, you can visit the beautiful city of Linz. Yeah, I mean, we told the schedule before, but on the 28th, there is like a small tournament to get used to the meta. On the 29th, there is like the big ELM qualifier. And on Sunday, we have a classic tournament, a little bit less of an entry, but you want to play Magic when you travel here, so we deliver with it.
That's true, and we all will cover it in basic, nice live stream sessions from the In Response guys, so definitely don't miss that one.
And with the In Response guys, we want to thank our Patreons. We have precious three guys in there. We want to thank Gino, Moritz, and Duncan. Matt Duncan.
Thank you for support. Make sure to follow us in our social media channels everywhere. We are @InResponse_Legacy. @Response_Legacy. Basically. And with that, I think we can head into our topic that you kind of spoiled already, Peter. When you read the title, it is called One Orc to Rule Them All. What do you think about this? I think it is pretty clear, actually. It is about the Orcish Bowmaster that is running really hot in Legacy at the moment.
Yeah, it's a really, really strong card. And I think we said it in the spoiler that it's going to be a big card. I think you brought up the mental misstep conversation. I, for example, said, yeah, it's going to be an okay and good card in the format because I completely misread the card. Mm-hmm. It couldn't even get to my mind that it says ping any target.
That was what you missed?
I thought it was like ping your opponent that draws the card. And it was like, I mean, it's quite nice. It gets a little bit of chip damage, so it's good in tempo decks and stuff like that, but what the fuck?
No, you can. It says really any target.
I think I should now bow before my master, and the card is really good, and we have some nice stats for you. For example, in the top 8 of the latest showcase challenge, there were 7 out of 8 decks with new Lord of the Ring cards. In those top 8, we had 22 Bowmasters.
Yeah.
That's an average of 2.75 copies of the card in each of those top 8 decks. And four of those decks were Grixis Tempo, I believe, or at least tempo-based shells with the Orcish Bowmaster. And over the top 32, we had 21 out of 32 decks with Lord of the Rings cards, 49 Bowmasters in 14 lists, and 11 lists, or 11, the one ring in 3 lists. So,
yeah. It's kind of really showcasing that it's definitely not only a factor of people trying out these new cards. I mean, I think it certainly is a factor because they're really excited for the new cards, but you certainly should not be able to make top 8 on that consistent basis if you jam bad cards into your deck, you know. And this really showcases that, especially Bowmaster, as you have showed us with the numbers, Peter, is a really impactful card. And by the way, this is a post from Futurism. We should shout it out. We found it on Twitter. Really, really nice comparison or kind of showcasing how the Lord of the Ring cards have impacted the latest events. And I think this will be similar in the next upcoming ones as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think Orcish Bowmaster is now a card to stay in the format. It's kind of in the mental misstep situation because, like, the best decks currently are the decks that can play Orcish Bowmasters but aren't really affected by Orcish Bowmasters. So,
yeah, of course.
So it's...
Unless if you play Bowmasters, what is a good card against you? Bowmasters. Because the fact that you play Bowmasters, what is the best answer to a Bowmaster is Bowmaster.
It's the Bowmaster.
And I had this actually in the last FNM. I played the newly kind of hyped Buck Scam deck that we briefly talked about in, not really briefly, but we talked about extensively in the last episode. Go check that out for sure. And I did have like a mirror match of control, kind of, let's say, how's it called? Not Porcupile, the other guy that likes to play Dark Faden. Strifopile.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. One guy in our meta always likes to play this deck. And of course, with new added Orcish Bowmasters, and it was just, you know, brainstorm in response Bowmasters. And then... okay, Bowmaster resolve, I gotta ping you, but before Brainstorm resolve, I flash in my own Bowmaster to kill your Bowmaster so that my Brainstorm won't trigger the Bowmaster to deal 3 damage. So it's like Bowmaster, in response to any cantrip, it was like Bowmaster. It was so insane. But it is really like mental misstep in a way, if you're headed in that direction. And the last Bowmaster to stay is ahead. It is just as it is.
I mean, I saw the boss state. It was like an 8-8 Orc army. No, not an Orc army. It was then a Minskin Boo token. But yeah, the Orcs grow and grow. And when you are ahead on the board, you don't really need to cantrip that much. So the opposing Bowmasters aren't really affected. So if you get behind on board, the Bowmasters are really, really restrictive in what you can do. Because basically, you have any commitment to the board.
Mm.
Any Brainstorm will kill it,
yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really interesting situation. And yeah, for example, I played Zephyr Breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And when your opponent had a Bowmaster out, you couldn't deploy any combo pieces because like everything got shut down.
Unless you never draw a card again.
Yeah.
But this is so punishing in a way. I mean, technically dealing a couple of damage to the face is not a problem.
No.
But when it involves planeswalkers getting killed or, as you said, combo pieces might get killed, it is really problematic. And I think for that reason, I'm personally also off Breakfast at the moment because of that, because all of the combo pieces get really hit hard by the Bowmasters. I think I really liked, you also played it, the stuff. But when you have a stuff in play, the Bowmasters completely invalidates the card. It is just a clean sweep. Draw a card, okay, I kill your token. And I get another orc kind of a mass. And yeah. I mean, you still get to draw the card, of course, but still, yeah, it's very punishing.
It was like when I played against you, I had one situation where it was like okay to draw a card of my stuff, and this was only because you activated your pernicious deed to kill my my construct tokens. So I got to draw a card for free because the Amaz Orc would die immediately.
Yeah.
And this was like the only point where I would able yeah. to be a draw a card.
Exactly. And this feels really bad, of course, for this kind of deck. And this for this reason, definitely, I think the meta will shift in some way or another. I don't know if it will settle in some way. I don't think like right now we see like a clear big winner that crushes all. But it may also be that a card like Bowmasters slots into a lot of different decks, actually.
Yeah.
Which is, in general, a good thing when you think of I don't know, like, I don't know, a typical example is, of course, like Prince and Pondo. It's, like, in every deck, it's strong and powerful, but it's in every kind of blue deck, and therefore it is fine. Maybe this is also the case for Bowmasters. Yeah. Also, exclusively because it deals with itself from the opponent, as we said. But we'll see how this will go. I think there are some very interesting decks that we can have a look at.
Yeah.
That not only play the Bowmaster, but also a lot of the Rings cards that might be of interest to have a look.
And yeah, there are specifically three cards that are currently in interest. It's like the One Ring, the yeah. Orcish Bowmaster, and like the one favorable card that is nice is like the Deliberated Halfling.
The Delighted.
Delighted Halfling.
Delighted Halfling, yeah.
It's like a really, really nice card that sees some play, especially with so many powerful three drops that are legendary. But yeah, I think we showed the current menace of the format. Mm. I think we could call it because it performs really, really good. And it's Grixis Tempo. It's basically Blue Red Delver or the Grixis Delver shells that yeah. splashed Snuff out. And now are playing three to four Orcish Bowmasters in the deck to their threat suit with Delver of Secrets and Dragon Rage Channeler and the Murktide Regent. And then the rest is like Brainstorm, Ponder, Four Stays,
yep.
Bolts, and a few Snuff Out and Four Teasers.
When looking at this, I think it's pretty clear that the Ruck Delver that has previously been one of the Delver decks to play is definitely gone, I think, at this point. I've seen two kind of versions. I don't know if you've seen it. Two kind of Delver versions popping up. It is the Grixis one that you mentioned. And there is also popping up some Jeskai versions.
Yeah.
With the new fourth Aelingas.
Yeah.
And this card is also not too bad.
It is really good.
Yeah, it is like red and white and X, and yeah. it's a sorcery, but it says you can create X 2/2, I think white and red human
tokens with haste.
Yeah, with trample and haste, 2/2s. And whenever you hit your opponent, I think, until the end of turn, you get the monarch. So you kind of trample over with that. It's a mana sink. And I think even for 4 mana, you get 2/2s with trample and haste. And plus, you get the monarch, pretty likely, is pretty good of a deal. And what also is great is those are 2/2s and don't get killed right away from Orcish Bowmasters. I think this is definitely a big plus. And yeah, so these kind of Delver decks are popping up, I think, in my what I've seen so far.
Yeah, especially the Jeskai version. I think, is 4th Earlings on MTGO?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure. I think so.
It's so complicated when not every card is released on the platform. So it's like, but I've seen success from the guys with Jeskai as well. It's like such a sweet finisher card. Finisher in a sense, it's like the value card that you can deploy on turn 3 or even on turn 2 if you only have a Delver and you have like multiple of those that you know you have the mana sink in, so you can extensively trade with Force of Will because you recoup the card disadvantage. It's a card that is really strong, in my opinion, in red-white initiative because it pitches like to... to all the elementals. It's a good exile card for Chromox because it taps for both colors. So you can play like the white and the red 4-drop Caves of Chaos Adventurer and the other white one that is not Wildplume Adventurer. But it's like really a sweet new card.
Yeah, absolutely. And also... it is play in some control or Stormblade decks. It is kind of similar to what you like, could be compared to something like Entreat Your Angels. Like a mana sink, when the dust settles after some kind of resource tradings, you just cast this card for, I don't know, tap all your mana, produce a bunch of tokens, and then you're pretty ahead, I would say. This is a very strong card, and I even saw this in a very, very nice list. It is kind of an Esper shell.
Yeah.
With Strix, Bowmasters, and I think a couple of Snapcaster Mages, normal control shell with swords and endings and stuff like this.
So it's basically Esper Splash Red for Blasts, but with 4th Alings.
And with a 3 or 4th Alien gas in the main deck, yeah. Really strong. Looks a little bit greedy on the mana side because, of course, you cannot play basics, just all the duels. But this is some kind of typical, almost feels like check pile kind of, because it had 4 Hymn-to-Torak in the main as well.
Such greed.
I now remember it, yeah. It is like chef's kiss, in my opinion. But it's very greedy,
Yeah, so you basically have to hope that your opponent doesn't have the 4 of Wasteland. Yeah,
I can't really recall how or where I found this list and what place, I don't know, but it's certainly stuck in my memory because it's so nice.
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, like 4 of Lingus is definitely a card that will also see a lot of play, depending how the format looks.
Yeah.
Especially with if we have a really fast format or if the format slows down, this card gains a lot of value or decreases in value. Because like if we have like a format in, for example, against Orcish Bowmaster, we will have to decide how the meta shakes out a little bit. Do we move a little bit more into the combo perspective where we have like a lot of turn 1, turn 2, turn 3 kills?
Mm.
Because then the Orcish Bowmaster isn't really effective because it comes on turn 2, doesn't provide much value until turn 3.
Yeah.
Or do we slow down because everyone wants to fight against it, has a lot of pact removal spells, has the Orcish Bowmaster itself and stuff like that.
I think it's like a combination of both, actually. Yeah. Because I certainly agree with you when you say people will play more removal. Because when you are playing cantrips, you want to deal with this kind of card. You don't want to lose right away when somebody just flashes in the Bowmasters, right? So I think naturally we will play more Bowmasters, more removal in general, and this favors combo decks that don't care about at all, like for this kind of interaction. And my biggest thought here goes to something like Black Saga Storm.
Yeah.
For example, it just doesn't have really cantrips. It has some bubble action, okay, but it doesn't have creatures really. It doesn't care if you ping the face once. It can technically never really kill a construct because they're really
big,
at least 3/3, 4/4, because you have a bunch of artifacts in play, and then you just combo.
Yeah, the only problem with Black Saga Storm is that the payoff is usually Peer into the Abyss, or a lot of times, and you die in response to a Peer if the Bowmaster is flashed in. But Black Saga Storm, for example, is also on a real big uptick currently.
Yeah.
It's performed really, really well. I think it was like top 4 in the 10K, which was won by Brian Koval.
Yeah.
Performed by, I always forget his name, but he is...
Tony Scaboni.
Tony Scaboni.
Yeah. This is kind of the puny of this deck and the inventor, I think.
And I think there was in Europe also a big tournament...
Yeah.
where it went like top four or top two even.
Yeah.
So like Black Sagerstorm is definitely on the upswing because the two plans commit to the board with big artifacts or big constructs or go all in on turn one and win the game. It's like so hard to deal with. It's yeah, it's basically two very, very solid good plans.
Yeah.
And if you catch the wrong one, your opponent wins.
Exactly. And what you know what really enlightens my heart a little bit is I saw popping up some ant lists again, ANT.
Yeah.
Because of the same reasons we just discussed. And what I really like about this is that ant basically is a deck that very, very nicely utilizes one of the best cards, I think, or one of the underrated cards at the moment of this format. Because, you know, black is really on the upswing.
Yeah.
One of the best cards to answer all this kind of grief or him or whatever, or even Bowmaster sometimes, is just Veil of Summer.
Yeah.
And Ant just naturally plays fourth Veil of Summer in the main deck. So it is a Storm deck. It is a creature-less deck that doesn't care about Bowmasters to the most extent. And Veil of Summer just helps you so much, I think, at the moment. So maybe it is the time again for Storm to shine a little bit.
I currently read the Orcish Bowmaster. And yeah, if you have protection from black, they have to shoot something. I mean, they basically shoot their orc, but
so it says you deal one damage.
Deal one damage to any target.
Yeah, yeah. So if you Veil of Summer, they have to deal it to one of themselves. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah,
sweet.
This is a nice interaction that certainly can matter.
But yeah, the problem is like they ping their own orc and then they amass orc one. So they create a new token. And if you do it like 20 times, they have still a 20-20 orc and the one got pinged 20 times. But they don't amass orc one if the target has faded. So they don't have a token anymore. Basically after...
So you mean if they have already an orc 1-1 in play and they have to ping it or they ping it and then they would amass...
They still get one token, but if they have like 20 triggers on the stack and they have to ping the 1-1 orc, the 1-1 orc dies, then they create a new token and then the 19 other triggers fade because or fizzle.
Okay, this makes sense because it's based on the first token that is already or was before on the battlefield. Yeah. That is true.
But yeah. Fancy town.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like how... One thing that I wanted to mention before is like with Orcish Bowmaster, the amount of removal went up really, really big in the decks.
Yeah.
For example, like if you play like an Esper deck currently versus like Elves or something like that, you have like 10 to 12 removal spells.
Mm.
And nowadays you play also like Termini and stuff like that in the decks. So you have like a lot of solution against the 1-1s. So it will be really, really interesting how, the meta fades. I mean, Elves is basically unplayable in a format where we have like this many Bowmasters because they will just die. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, will be interesting. But other decks that came out is like Esper is a little bit on the upswing.
Mm-hmm. In general, Esper it has the best removal suit in the format. It is blue, obviously, and black is becoming more attractive just because of Bowmasters. Yes,
yeah.
And I think in general, I think this card has been like on the highest it has been in terms of value like for a long time. Like him, the Turok is good again, kind of. We see grief. We see Thoughtseize even. You know, this Black Sagerstorm is just solely basing their disruption on Duress and Thoughtseize. And these kind of things were not possible a couple of months ago. And I think this is actually a good thing because black is kind of back on the menu.
Yeah, it's kind of in the way of back to black. It's really nice because like Bowmaster strength is like is the combination to this card.
Mm.
Bowmaster really shines when your opponent has to dig to find their cards. And so against blue decks, it's really insane. If you basically hum to Turok and Fotsis them, and on turn three, you drop the Bowmaster, they lost a lot of their key cards in their hand. And most likely, if you play against the blue deck, they have to find their cards with cantrips.
Yeah.
And this is the situation where Bowmaster shines, in my opinion. It's like so neat because you get like a lot of incremental value in there. Maybe they find like a Teferi or stuff like that. But the problem with Teferi to deal with Orcish Bowmaster is like it bounces the Orcish Bowmaster. But then you still have the Mass Orc 1 token, or you flash in your Orcish Bowmaster to kill it. So Teferi isn't really a good card against it, which is a lot of the mid-game removes you of those cards.
It's very good against Planeswalkers in general because it's multiple bodies, and it has an ETB that actually deals with Planeswalkers to a certain extent. So Teferi gets weaker, Nazit gets weaker, and cantrips in general. So I think we might drifting away from this kind of, you know, solitaire control kind of style where you just drop Planeswalker after Planeswalker. I mean, things like Minsk and Boo will definitely be still very, very strong. But other than that, Bowmaster kind of invalidates a little bit of all the other Planeswalkers. And I wouldn't say they are unplayable, but they are weakened to a certain extent. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it will be kind of interesting to see how it develops. Because like Orcish Bowmaster on the other end against control is like most of the control decks are Uro decks currently.
Yeah.
And Orcish Bowmaster does a really, really good job at preventing Uro to come to your life total. Because it basically attacks and creates an Orc token if you don't have one. Then you have the Orc token to block the creature. It's so nice.
Yeah, yeah, of course they still get a value. I think you lose in the end against the Uro.
But it buys you so much time.
It buys time, and when you then have your white removal spells, you can just ending or swords the Uro, and then it's fine. So Uro is still very good. So I think for me kind of Esper is really, really good at the moment. But for me the question is how does for control decks, how does red and green fit now into the picture? Because for green you have like Uro, but for red you have the blasts.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not sure which side I would pick at the moment. It's difficult.
The thing is like when you take green, you definitely want to take red. Because like with green you have like access to Uro and Minsk and Boo.
But you could also play like a dark band kind of strategy without red, where you just have Bowmasters as anti-blue.
Yeah.
Could also work.
Yeah, it will be really, really interesting how it develops. Because, like, on the other hand, we have, like, the deck provided by Ark, and it's, like, a Jackpal version. It's like full-on control, all colors, just not green.
Yeah.
It's, like, Creature Suite, Orcish Bowmaster, Snapcaster Mage. To have, like, additional removal to fight everything that you want. Then you have like Fire and Ice, because Fire and Ice is like a really, really good card to deal with Orcish Bowmaster.
Yeah.
Because it pings like both of the creatures. And then like, Prismatic Ending Swords of Plowshares, this good stuff, and the stuff of the Storyteller. And stuff is a really interesting card currently. You need to have a lot of removal, and especially instant speed removal, to deal with Orcish Bowmaster if you want to play stuff. Because stuff is a really, really vulnerable card in this metagame, but the value with Orcish Bowmaster stuff with Storyteller is also so good.
Yeah, they play really well together. It is an engine, kind of, that works that way. What I don't like is that an opposing Bowmasters is good against both.
Yeah.
Kind of. This is, but of course, it is still value. As I said, people have been calling Bowmasters also kind of ban-worthy at some point, I think, already. I think this kind of discussion pops up very, very, very soon in these kind of situations. I'm not sure, because it does not prevent the actual card draw itself. but it punishes it in a way that is noticeable and good. That is, and maybe that's fine. I'm not sure. Maybe it's really like a kind of brainstorm kind of effect that will stay in Legacy. Not sure. But it certainly shows a very, very important weight. That's definitely for sure.
And Bowmaster currently has a really nice niche, I would say. It's like you can do a lot of cool stuff with it. On the one hand, we have like the Hull Breacher decks with Orcish Bowmaster, where you basically let your opponent draw a lot of cards and win the game. On the other hand, it's a new good playable win condition for World Gotcha Dragon, for example.
I mean, one of the niche and it's hardly played decks.
Yeah, it's a deck that doesn't really see much love and doesn't really is played a lot. But it's basically a card that is good on its own, and it's very good on its own. Mm. But with the World Gotcha Dragon loop, you basically win the game because you ping your opponent down to zero.
Yeah, of course.
So it's like a card that can see its niche. But the problem with it, it's like really good in a lot of decks because it's so good against blue. But let's focus a little bit on Hull Breacher Echo. It's like the deck plays now 4 Shield Red because your opponent dies if you play Wheel. I mean, he takes 14 and you gain 14. It has 4 Orcish Bowmasters to punish your opponent. Hull Breacher, your opponent doesn't draw cards. But it doesn't matter if it doesn't draw cards because it doesn't have something to play. Then you have Narset, Karn, Days Undoing, Force of Will, Echo of Eons.
I've seen versions of this without Yorion as well. So like more a streamlined version. I think without Hull Breacher, without
Narset,
Days Undoing. I think I've seen a version with Echo of Eons, of course, and Entomb.
Yeah,
and that you go that route, you know, just Bowmasters, just Shield Red, and then Dark Ritual, Entomb, and I don't know about. I think Lions and Diamond could also be the case, but there are certain, and this we found now a Yorion version is also kind of popping up, but this combo deck, the combination of Shield Red, Orcish Bowmasters, is a really good punish in addition to the Narset. And I think what is interesting about this deck is that all individual pieces are strong as is or individually. So Bowmaster is, of course, strong. Hull Breacher is sometimes a little bit clunky, but is still a very punishing card.
Yeah.
And Shield Red is just a house, of course. If it sticks, it can... A lot of decks cannot beat this card.
Yeah, it's basically like an Orcish Bowmaster because it just says to your opponent, you don't have much time, you are not really allowed to play any cantrips anymore. And one thing that we have to mention here, kind of to play to the rules, guys, when you play this deck in paper, Days Undoing says at the end, if it's your turn, end the turn. You don't get any triggers from Shield Red and Orcish Bowmaster in there.
Yeah.
Because those are triggers that will be added after the effect resolves.
Yeah.
But those won't happen if the turn is ended.
So
you don't get your 8-8 Orgami.
That is true. That is a noticeable side effect. But still, this deck or this combination of cards. I don't know if it is kind of a new hot combo deck, but it sees play. It sees some. It has seen some results. And it's definitely interesting. What I think is maybe more of an interesting and very, very strong synergistic combo deck is not involving Bowmasters for a change. It is Mystic Forge. And this kind of strategy has been a big part of Legacy meta games since a long time already. It is I would compare it to Vintage Mud a little bit. You know, this kind of artifact.
It plays a little bit like the Paradox Engine. Not Paradox Engine, but the, how is it called? The 4-drop, the blue.
Paradoxical Outcome.
The Outcome decks,
In Vintage, there's like a colorless artifact stack with Workshop.
Yeah.
That it's just called Mud or Shops. You know, Ravage Shops is also a deck, deck name like this. I would compare it to this, but of course it has an engine in the One Ring being now implemented, it is really strong because it gives you infinite kind of time walks almost because you get protection from everything until your next turn. So and you can untap it and tap it again and draw
your whole
basically your whole deck, yeah, because you have Voltaic Key and Manifold Key to untap it.
Paradox Engine, which untaps all your artifacts, so you are allowed to play really, really big Walking Ballistas or even Emrakul there. Yeah. And the nice thing with the One Ring is the previous, it's the Mystic Forge combo deck.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the One Ring, you have like 7 to 8 combo pieces in there. Because like Mystic Forge draws you a lot of cards because you can play the cards from the top. And the Ring basically draws you also a lot of cards.
Yeah.
Which is like the main engine you want to have in there. It's like basically when, how is it called? Like Infernal Tutor got printed and before you only had Burning Wish.
Yeah.
It's now you have like 8 tutors instead of 4 and it makes deck way better, way more consistent. And yeah, it's another 4-drop that you can play after your Basalt or Grim Monolith. So it's like really, really good.
Can be a strong turn 2 play. And if it doesn't get countered, you just get like a time walk.
Yeah.
And when you untap with the ring, it's certainly really strong. You just can jam a lot or chain them also together. At a certain point, you have to deal with them because the life loss is too much.
Yeah.
But it is very nicely, it is legendary. So you can just cast another one, get rid of the old one, and then combo again. Or not really combo, but make some value and draw some cards.
And a lot of time, you don't really have to pass anymore after the turn one because you get protection, so nothing can really happen.
Yeah.
And then on the turn two, you get like 2 cards, untap it, draw 3 cards, da 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 da, and basically go off in there. And it's like really, really cool. Shout out to Marvin Bravin, who won like a 56 player tournament in Brazil. So yeah, looks really, really nice.
It keeps popping up more and more in all different challenges also and other tournaments, so it's definitely a strong deck that won a lot from the One Ring being printed.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, what do we have left? We talked about Grixis Delver in particular. We talked about Espa as the new shell. Then we had like one card that we want to talk about.
Yeah,
and it's a Delighted one.
The Delighted Halfling, I think. It is still not yet clear if this card is strong or not. What I like about the card is that Bowmasters cannot kill it because it is a 1-2.
Yeah.
That is if it would have been a 1-1, then I think it would not be strong and not playable. But given that it is a 1-2, I think it is, of course, naturally a nice fit into some kind of band or 4-color control versions with the One Ring to a certain extent. I think Unseat made a really nice version that has been very successful also. I think 4th place in, what is it, a preliminary on Magic Online.
And it got updated and went top 4 in the Showcase Challenge.
Okay, yeah.
Or not top 4 in the Showcase, but in another challenge, yeah.
So the Halfling is really strong in that sense that, you know, all your payoffs are legendary.
Yeah.
So the One Ring you have the Teferi, you have Minskin Boo, and you have Uro. So all of them are uncountable. And this is a very, very scary thing that your opponents really have to respect.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Lighted Halfling really, in my opinion, screams like Lightning Rod. You have to kill it.
Yeah, one thing that was really good previously was like the Pyroblast against those decks, because like you could Pyroblast the Teferi on the stack, you Pyroblasted the back set of Uro most of the time, because then like 5 cards of the graveyard got exiled, it was a mana commitment of 4, they don't get to draw the card because it was counted on the stack, and now you have to deal with it on a permanent, which means they draw an additional card, they get 3 life, which is mostly control mirrors negligible. Yeah. But yeah, they gain value out of it. So you have to kill the halfling, and you really wanted to have the swords and the prismatic ending and stuff like that for the Uros, and the prismatic ending for Minsk and Boo and the Teferi. And now you have to kind of, in kind of a way, waste it for the Mana Dork, because the Mana Dork provides such a good value.
Yeah, it is a ramp. And now that you said it, I think this Pyroblast looks to a certain extent quite iffy against this control version, because it does not do anything against the halfling. Pyroblasting and Uro almost feel kind of
wasted.
Not really wasted, but you're not really happy.
Yeah.
And you cannot blast the ring, you cannot blast the Minskimbu, so you only really can blast the Teferi, and if it's uncountable, you just cannot blast it. But of course, I wouldn't say that blast is bad, but
blast is definitely on a downswing. A lot of the Grixis control decks and stuff like that moved from 3-4 to 2-3 blasts. Mm. So like the blast ratio got reduced by 1.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is.
Yeah. I think now is definitely not the time
to be blasting.
To play main deck blast, except for maybe one deck.
That we have to mention.
That we have also to mention. But other than that, a blast, as you said, is definitely a downswing, for sure.
Yeah.
And but this one deck is very important.
Other colors, also.
paints other colors, exactly. So the biggest red deck still in the format, because kind of red is also in total with the splash color of blast being on a downswing. We still have Painter as the primary red deck, and I think it's also one of the big successors or beneficial archetypes for the new Lord of the Ring cards.
Yeah, we have like the two mainstay cards that could be played in the deck. We have like the One Ring on the one hand, which is like in the calm slot, I would say, but the versions I'm personally looking into are like the ones that splash black, because like we have in paper at least a very, very big draw to black in Chaos Defiler, which we talked about like for half a year now.
Yeah. It's still not on Magic Online.
Still not on MTGO.
Yes.
But now we have a big red card, a big black card in the main deck, and this one is Orcish Bowmaster. It's like the assemblance of fucking over blue decks with like a lot of blasts now with the Orcish Bowmaster. So a lot of value in there. And Orcish Bowmaster in itself is like one matchup where I personally struggled always a little bit was like elves and stuff like that. Because like you had like a good removal suit and fury and stuff like that, but they always got out of control like when you don't combo early. Now with Orcish Bowmaster, this matchup feels like a buy. Mm. It's like really, really strong. So we have like Orcish Bowmaster added to the deck. We lost in the main deck a few cards that were meant for specific matchups and stuff. So it's not really mentionable what cards we lost. And we got like a really, really big 2-drop in there. Goblin Welder, for example, is also, in my opinion, a little bit on the downswing, because like it's an X-Bone. It's the same as when Renin 6 got printed. All the X-Ones lost value.
Mm. Yeah, it's the same with Wombmasters now.
Yeah.
Of course, it is still far from the case where Painter would cut something like Welder, because it's still the engine card.
It's the best card in the
Otherwise, deck. Chaos Defiler is definitely not playable, in my opinion, because you cannot make full value out of the by looping it from the graveyard into the play. And so Welder is still a must-have, of course. But I also like this list. It is strong, and I think, well, you said elves is kind of, I'm feeling almost sad for this, because there was a time where from Modern Horizons where we get so hit hard by Plague Engineer.
Yeah.
And now again, the next card is coming and just hitting on elves so hard.
It's the second funeral, basically.
Kind of. I mean, given that black is in upswing, also Plague Engineer is seeing more play, and this is also bad for elves. Of course, Bowmasters is not as bad as Plague Engineer, I think, because elves can... I mean, they can grind kind of through without drawing too many cards. It is possible to combo if they have the right cards, but still, you know, Visionary and Glimpse are one of the biggest and strongest engines they have.
I think you have to basically adapt your playstyle. I think this is currently the days of Natural Order, basically. You have to assemble your bigger elves and then drop in the Natural Order for a hoof. So, like, the card that I think gained a lot of value is Nettle Sentinel. Because it's like the elf that doesn't die to the Orcish Bowmaster. And yeah, I think when we talk about elves, we also have to talk about basically the Golgari control deck from, how's it called? The former elf master.
You mean like with this, how's it called? This fiend.
The fiend Shadow artisan.
Fiend artisan, right?
Fiend artisan elves. Because like, I think this shell could be really good, because this is a deck that doesn't really get hit by Orcish Bowmaster, is playing the plays at Orcish Bowmaster itself, and is having like incremental advantage all over. So it's kind of interesting spot for the metagame. I kind of want to see how it looks in a month.
Definitely true. I think for we've talked about a lot of different decks. What I think might be left is, what, Peter, do you think, or what is your impression on how this will develop?
Wow, such a hard-hitting question.
No, it's
really
right before the end. I'm just hitting hard with this question.
It will be really, really interesting how it shakes up, because like, we are currently in the spot on how many Bowmasters can the format hold. Maybe we see a decrease in Bowmaster, because like, a lot of decks shift to non-draw spells, or a lot of the metagame shifts to non-blue decks, in a sense. Like, we had like Death and Taxes now popping up with a big finish in the 5k in America. The mana bases are getting worse and worse now. So maybe something like Blue-Red Delver can be really good, because you have access to the basic islands and stuff like that. But the question is like, what cards do you play that are favorable into Orcish Bowmaster without having to dig a lot for them?
Yeah.
So it's, I have no idea how it looks.
What deck would you play, kind of? What are your bets on which deck?
I mean, I have two decks that I'm looking to.
Yeah.
Which is, on the one hand, we have like Red Black Painter, which I have to get used to playing a lot more, because maybe it's my deck for the album. On the other hand, we have like the Mauro pile that we brewed with Phil, which could be really, really nice, because it can hold the place at Bowmaster in there. But on the other hand, it's still an Stuff with Storyteller deck.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get hit as much as like the blue decks. So it will be interesting how it shakes up. My bet is currently more on the painter side.
Yeah, I think so too. This is definitely the stronger pick. Like, in general, I don't have a clue. I think we should not dismiss combo too much, because all this kind of hitting around with Bowmasters really opens up a spot for combo. Because this is one of the archetypes that really almost doesn't care about combo. Yeah. And also, speaking of decks like lands and Naya Depths, these decks almost don't care at all. They just, if you know, people are fighting over each other, then just land stomps all the others.
Yeah.
This is really, really one deck to watch out, I think. And it sees more and more play. But given that a lot of these cards are slotting into so many different decks, it is, I think, we will have a balance, but not a clear best deck. I think it will be still a very nice format, but some decks will be pushed out. I think Breakfast is on the downswing because of that. For example, it has been really kind of top tier before that, but now it is, I think we need to make room for other decks to shine. Maybe Devil will be big again. I don't know. But this debate is very interesting, but we can only speculate, in my opinion.
Yeah, it will be really, really interesting. But yeah, what is your bet for the deck? Or what deck will you play in the future?
I would really like to play this kind of Czech Pile version, as I discussed. I really liked this version with Bowmasters, Hym, and Fourth Elingas. This is really value, you know. But yeah. I'm not much of a control player. I personally cannot see myself playing Breakfast all that much at the moment, although I would really like to. I don't think it's good enough. Scam is a little bit iffy because it just folds to something like Lance. I also wanted I have Painter as well in my pipeline. I might try that one. Never tried it. Definitely would need to get some practice with that deck. Or other than that, I don't know. It's difficult. It's very difficult.
It's very, very difficult when you don't have a clear deck you want to play. And I think the deck we want to play is something for the next episode.
Exactly.
Which is, I think, exactly the weekend where the Alm is.
I think it's after that, right? I'm not sure. We can quickly check.
The next episode will air on the 28th.
Exactly, yes. So this will be kind of the Alm kind of celebration opening episode. So make sure, as said in the beginning, to grab your tickets as long as they are available. We're happy to see you in Linz in Austria. And make sure to follow us, of course, in our social media channels. We are at response_ in basically everywhere.
Legacy.
Yes. Where can we find you, Peter, in your social media?
You can find me exclusively on Twitter. It's @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. Where can we find you, Daniel?
You can find me also on Twitter. It is @flyingdelver. #Bowmasters. No. Just Bowmastering now. No. @FlyingDelver. And thanks again to all the listeners, to the Patreons that we mentioned. And I think, hear you next time.
In response. The end.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.